Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello and welcome back to the Under the Cosh podcast. We're here, we've made it, episode 2. Can you believe it? I just wanted to take a minute before we started to say thank you to everybody who has listened, left reviews on iTunes, told the mates and all that jazz. It does go a long way. And also just to say that we hear a few comments on the sound quality. And we're taking direct action, yes. To be honest, we were just dicking about in a pub with a microphone. For when we started, and we hear what you're saying, and we're moving on. Pastures new into the studio already, eh? How about that? Check us out. But we are in—I will say—we are in the pub for this episode, so I would expect, you know, the clinking of ice in Brownie's G&Ts every now and again, the Flash Bastard, Gladys collecting glasses, and occasionally, very occasionally, there is a fridge or a Buddhist monk, I'm not too sure, that starts humming in the background. But then it goes again, so don't worry about that. But no, we're moving on. We're here, yeah, and we're going to the studio. We haven't told the landlord yet because I think he had his eyes on a timeshare in Torremolinos off the way Parky's tab were going, so he's going to be extremely disappointed. But for you, it's good news. And again, if you haven't left us a review on iTunes, please do. Here it is, Andy Griffin. Found a club yet, Chris?
No, still in Bosman.
Yeah, he's still looking, but I've had a bit bad week. I missed a penalty Sunday, Saturday.
I'm a bit disappointed you don't let me bring that in.
Well,
to be honest,
I might as well get it in there for you, do, yeah. So.
Why are you smiling?
Hey?
Why are you smiling?
Embarrassment.
Oh, embarrassment.
Embarrassment.
Save?
No, crossbar. Crossbar.
You struck it well though, didn't you?
Caught it very well. But
you still won?
We still won the game, yeah, we beat Salford 1-0, so.
Go bonus.
Oh well. Well, I would have got one if I had
a fucking score. That's really
your one. You don't get a bonus for hitting the crossbar as well, really.
What do you want for the season?
25.
What?
25.
You got 25 already?
Yeah.
Have you?
A good number of
don't
years left.
Do you, John?
Feed the beast.
If you look after yourself, Chris. You put the right fuels in.
We've got Andy Griffin with us. You all right,
mate? Yeah, very well. Very well, thank you. Not too bad.
Illustrious career. Stoke, Newcastle, Portsmouth. Some big names as well.
In terms of clubs?
Clubs,
yeah, players.
Managers as well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was very fortunate to play under some great managers. The first manager, Lou McCary. And then it was Kenny Dalglish who took me to Newcastle, and yeah. Bobby Robson, Rude Hullett, Harry Redknapp, to name but a few. So yeah, very very fortunate with the managers that I had.
Did you mention Tony then, Griff?
Did you hear me mention Tony?
No, did you mention Tony?
I didn't mention Tony.
No,
you just mentioned Tony. But now that you have mentioned John, Tony Peels as well. Yes.
Yeah, I thought you still weren't going to mention him.
No, I will now. Thanks for bringing Tony up.
So McCary was your first. You were in the youth team.
Yeah.
Did he promote you to the first team?
Yeah. So Lou McCary at Stoke. It's quite funny because we played back then at Stoke. You had, so it was like the first team. Then you had the reserves, and then I think there was an A team as well, and then the youth team. And I was playing for the A team, and at half time, the manager at that time said, "Oh, get in the car, you've got to go down to the Victoria Ground, Stoke are playing." I think it was Portsmouth. You're on the bench. So got driven down.
At half time, you said that?
At half time, yeah. Got taken down and was on the bench. And I think I've come on with about 3 minutes to go, and I'm sure my first touch of professional football, like senior football, balls come out of the sky, and I thought, instead of just kind of hooking it on, I'll try and control it. Miscontrolled it, bang, in the face. And all have just gone.
To be fair, the nose is still swell from it.
Cheers, John. Thank you. So that was my first touch of professional football.
Well, Ryan said you got player of the season that year, 17-year-old.
Yeah, it was. It would have been that year, because it was the following season that I moved up to Newcastle, wasn't it? So
that's an introduction, right?
Yeah.
First so that year quite early in the season football. Then.
So I think it was October time that I made my debut against Portsmouth, then managed to just stay in the team, for the remainder of that season, and got player of the season.
So were you apprehensive about winning Newcastle at 18?
Was I apprehensive? I remember
the move, like, obviously as an 18-year-old lad leaving Stoke to live.
Was I apprehensive? Yeah, I suppose I was. You're nervous because you're going from a middle team in the Championship to a top four club, because Newcastle at that time were a top four club, and in my eyes, you know, they had superheroes there, you know, from the footballing world, in terms of Stuart Pearce was there, he was a hero of mine. I think Gary Speed was there, John Barnes was there, Ian Rush was there, I mean, Kenny Dalglish was the manager. And with me growing up in Wigan, but from a Liverpoolian family, you know, to have the likes of John Barnes, Ian Rush and Kenny Dalglish as the manager, I mean, yeah, you're going up there. And I remember the first time I saw the stadium, it was incredible. I was only 18 years of age at the time, and it only felt 2 years ago that you were watching England in the Euros 1996, and Shearer. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're like, Alan Shearer is on such a pedestal.
How good was he in training? And
I would always judge my own professionalism and other people's professionalism on what I saw Alan Shearer do. I mean, Alan Shearer would be, I mean, he had some really bad injuries, didn't he? But he would always be in the treatment room working on his knees, working on his ankles. He had that discipline. And I would always then think, right, if Alan Shearer can do it, this is what you need to do. So then further on in your career, when you've been at a club like Newcastle, usually, when you move away from Newcastle, it's a downward step, particularly at that time anyway. Then when you're looking at players who aren't as professional and who think they are, I suppose, better than what they actually are, that infuriated me at times. But in terms of ability, his professionalism, I mean, his ability was second to none. And when he spoke, you listened. You know, he commanded that much respect. And
that must be good for the manager as well. To have that player in your dressing room, running the dressing room, the manager's job's made.
Well,
it makes
it a lot easier, doesn't it?
Yeah, got to worry about things.
Do you know, when you went from Stoke to Newcastle, were you always as professional as what you are, or did you learn from the lads already at Newcastle? Did that teach you how to go about it, to be a professional footballer properly?
I suppose my professional, I never liked to drink, was never a drinker, didn't like alcohol, so that was a blessing in disguise.
lucky so. and
fell in love young, got married at 21. So there was no other distractions. No distractions. Even when I went to Newcastle, I thought, you know what? They put me up in this 2-bedroom apartment on the quayside, and it was lovely. But I remember thinking to myself, I've got to get out. I can't be. You know, you hear about Newcastle being this wonderful, vibrant city. And I thought, I've got to get out.
On a Saturday night, you've got to get out? Or you mean you've got to get
John,
out?
John, no.
You've actually got to get out and live somewhere else.
I mean, the
I've
odd
got to get
night
out,
out
Tuesdays, listen, I've got to get out Wednesdays.
The odd night out is okay. Yeah, you know, it's about having that balance, isn't it? But I remember, I do remember thinking, a good friend of mine come up, and we went... saw this bungalow for sale, and it was about 20 miles north of Newcastle in a little village called Felton. You know, it was almost on the Scottish border, I swear, it was that far north. And I bought it because it was a little bungalow. It was a million miles away from everywhere else.
Must have been an expensive taxi home, that, from Newcastle then, haven't you? That was, you did have your nights, that.
that was expensive. It was probably cheaper to to have a hotel room for the night, I think. But yeah, so in terms of like your professionalism, I think falling in love and getting married so young really helped you kind of stay on the straight path. Anyway.
Griff, tell us about Bobby Robson.
Bobby Robson. Best manager I ever had, ever worked for.
In what way?
In what way? You know, it's...
Because Tony...
I often think...
Tony Pulis, tactically, was incredible. We all knew exactly what we were doing on a Saturday. We were drilled.
Yeah, you were drilled. Is that from a tactical point of view or an organisational point of view?
Bit of both.
Bit of both.
Yeah, I think...
So I think Tony, he didn't... He was hard, wasn't he? I'll get back to Bobby. Tony was very... He was very
regimented.
Tough and regimented, wasn't he? You know, and we did have a couple of fallouts, but Tony didn't leave any stone unturned. Extremely professional, would nail down your positions where you must be. If the ball is on the left hand side of the pitch, in the middle, it's on the right. If it's 20 yards. Into the opponent's half, it's 20 yards into. So we knew that we had to be the fittest team. We knew we had to be the most organised team, and we all bought into that, and that's what got us promotion, along with the camaraderie.
We weren't the second best team in that league. We finished second.
Yeah.
We weren't the second best team in that league.
Not from an ability point of view.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you, but because we had that togetherness and that bond between so many players, not just maybe four or five, it was more or less every single one.
Which is interesting because that's what you said about Preston as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, we mentioned that last week.
But to be fair, we didn't socialise a lot, did we, together? It weren't a bond from going out and socialising together, it was just a bond of...
I mean, we had a good time after we got promoted.
We had an incredible time, Magaluf, didn't we?
That was,
we had an incredible time. But
did you like alcohol then?
It was forced upon me.
Mocktails all week.
Can we when Bucko went, we're all out in us shorts, vests and whatever, and Lewis Buxton, for some reason, he's like, I'm going to go home and get changed. So he's gone, he's left us for maybe an hour and a half. So he's phoned us, we're in X bar.
This is John's idea, by
so
the
we've
way.
So we've just got a round in, right? So Bucko's walking down the street with his shirt on, jeans on, all smart.
Handsome lad, so looked $1 million,
yeah,
you know.
Look, you're looking well. Thought, fuck it, as soon as he comes in, we'll just drench him. So, what were there, 9, 10 of us?
Yeah.
Pints. So he's literally got 10 pints over his head. As soon as he walked, mate, raging. Yeah. Started swinging, didn't
he? Really?
Started swinging. Because obviously he's got to go home then and get changed. He weren't happy at all.
You wouldn't have
so as soon as he started swinging, I just got behind John. I was all right. But I mean, going back to obviously your question on Bobby Robson, I mean, Tony Pulis was brilliant in terms of leaving no stone unturned and very professional.
To the point where it was boring, weren't it?
It was
every day.
Training, we used to do some shape Tuesday, Thursday, Friday.
Oh, yeah, we'd go
the same
Monday.
Shape.
Yeah, Tuesday. Yeah.
Pretty much every day we're doing shit. But then we win Saturday 1-0
against teams where you're thinking, you know, Chelsea coming.
Yeah. I'd left by then.
And we put up a fight against a great Chelsea team, you know, and we were difficult to break down because of the repetition and you know and the hard work and you know everyone buying into what Tony was saying, but so Bobby Robson. I mean Bobby Robson coming to Newcastle.
Relax, can we hear Bobby Robson?
So
sure,
I'm gonna be Bobby Robson up at one point. Actually.
So what was so good about Bobby Robson? I mean, as soon as he come in, it was a case of having a little bit of common sense. Put Alan Shearer in the team, you know, straight away your team is better. So that's common sense, and he had what. He called his blue chip players, and they were the likes of Gary Speed, Kieran Dyer.
As in the play every week.
Yeah, so like his senior players.
Team.
Yeah, and he would kind of make a little bit of a fuss about them, you know, and make these players not necessarily believe in themselves, but he'd fluff the feathers, you know, and so these players would be like 10 foot tall, you know, and that it just boils down to his man management. Really.
So was he a coach? Did he do much coaching?
He he was out there. I mean, he was nearly 70. Bobby, listen, Bobby was nearly, he was 70, I think, or 68, 69 when he took over over Newcastle. And he was out there. I mean, John Carver would do a lot of the coaching, and Steve Clark. So you had two very good coaches. So Bobby would just be out there, he's loving the game, you know, he'd have his woolly hat on, he'd be wrapped up, and he would, you know, be holding a ball, and he'd sometimes be taking the warm-ups, and we'd be like, Gaffer, you don't need to take warm-ups, you know. You look like you're going to keel over. I'm not being funny. But, you know, just take it easy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, let the coaches coach. But it was his enthusiasm. Mm,
yeah.
You know, when he'd be running around, he'd be like, right, lads, you got to do this, you got to do that, stretch this, stretch. It would be, at times, it would be comical. But it's Sir Bobby Robson. So yeah. The man, a little bit like Alan Shearer, just commands respect, doesn't he?
Did he have a fear factor?
Sir Bobby Robson. Did he have a fear factor?
Do you know if you're walking past him in the corridor, you're like, oh, fucking hell, the gaffer's here?
No. No. Well, I wasn't afraid of him.
You're not mad with your fists, are you? We'll get onto that a bit later.
I can't wait to hear that one.
When we're on your time at Newcastle, we'll get on about that.
Okay. No, he didn't. He didn't have this fear factor about him. He was very, very much, you know, he had this granddad figure about him, where, you know, you could go and talk to him, you know, he would always give you his time. my playing days under Bobby were quite funny, really, because he'd bring me in against Man United, against Giggs, or he'd bring me in against Leeds, against Harry Kewell, or Tottenham against Ginola, and he'd leave me out against Southampton. I don't know who the winger was, and I'm thinking, well, I tell you what, if I've not got a Ryan Giggs to mark, maybe I can go that way, and I've not got my hands so full. But then he'd leave me out. So we'd have them kind of, those clashes. And that
was what he was doing.
Was it Warren Barton?
Yeah, so you had Warren Barton at first, and then Warren left. And a lot of the times it was myself and Aaron Hughes. And Aaron Hughes was, he was a 7/8 out of 10.
Was he better going forward than you?
I'll answer that question.
I know, you might as well get off that. We're going to ask a question and answer them. We're going to ask him and answer him.
Okay. So, possibly. Yeah, there must have been a reason. Possibly. I mean,
were you a better defender then?
Aaron was a very good defender. I mean, I was probably a little bit more of. I was kind of angry and
a rash,
aggressive, and yeah, you know,
a rash
and get into the wingers. And Aaron was probably a little bit more composed and cool, and you would never see Aaron like flying into a tackle and getting booked, but he'd always be in the right place at the right time. You know, extremely quick. Wouldn't be very often that you'd see a winger kind of get the better of him, and exceptionally good in the air. I'm awful. I think I jump and get smaller somehow. So I'm not very good in the air. So so Aaron obviously has his pluses over me. So
it sounds to me as though you're making a mess of Mr. Hit Bobby when he put you in against Giggs and Ginola. He's got everything, Aaron, isn't he?
Well, I mean, well,
he's fast as fuck. You just get better on the ball. He's better going forward.
Yeah, I mean, Aaron was. Well, that's why
positioning.
Aaron, that's why Aaron played more than me. That's why he did, and he went on to have a very, very good career.
If you stepped out of line, would he have you back privately and come down?
I mean, there was a couple of times where we did step out of line once, and got a little bit of a wrap around the knuckles. But there was a time when the four of us, me, Carl, Cole.
You can't just push over.
No, like, yeah.
You didn't have a party at your bungalow, did you?
Okay. So I mean, me, Courty, Kieran, and Bellamy, we stepped out of line. We were away in Marbella, and we didn't go to a Sir John Hall meal or something like that. And anyway, so there was 3 days left of the holiday. So the manager come to the conclusion, or the chairman, or whoever it was, you know, sent us home. And then obviously when the rest of the team come back, I almost went to see him and said, oh, you know, I just like to apologise. And he was like, yeah, okay, you know, take your punishment, you know, your 2 weeks' wages, and it's done now. You know, don't let it happen again.
Why'd you miss it?
Yeah,
where were you?
Well, the manager just said, you know, you can have the day to yourselves.
And
the
manager, we had a few beers,
we had a few beers, more than a few, and didn't go back and just stayed out.
Was there a big drinking culture? There must have been in the Quayside every other week. Dyer and that.
Well, we had. When Bobby come in, you know, he built a young team. And I think it's no secret that Kieran liked the night out.
Listing those early players that you initially went to Newcastle with, Stuart Pearce, Simon Shearer, Duncan Ferguson, Rob Lee, and then you look at the back end, like 2002, 2003, and you've got Craig Bellamy, Chopra, Kieran Dyer, Woodgate, Boyer, Titus Bramble. From a fan's perspective, there's a shift there.
Yeah, well, he certainly went down the road of youth and, you know, wanted more young players and invested heavily in youth. I think Woody and Bo had learnt the lesson from what happened at Leeds, you know. So they were very, very quiet and under the radar, come in, trained and just went home, kind of kept themselves to themselves.
Right. Yeah.
And Kieran lived in the city centre and... And like I said,
he should have got himself a bungalow.
He should have listened to me. You know, so he had a nice little flat in town, and his partner in crime, Titus, his friend from Ipswich. Bobby obviously brought Titus up, and you had Greg Bellamy.
What did you think to Bellas? What
in general, or
yeah, so what did you think to Bellas? Not as a player, as a person.
What do I think of Craig Bellamy? Bit of a handful, quite rude at times.
Yeah.
What, just in normal conversation he'd be rude, or?
Yeah, just...
With an arrogance, or just...
Yeah, with an arrogance at times. But what you also had to understand is Craig Bellamy had such a desire also to win a game of football.
I think that's the thing.
Yeah.
You know, when he was on the pitch, he was horrible. Like a bit like kind of like a Roy Keane. And if things weren't going his way, or he wasn't winning, or his teammates weren't up to his standards, he would let you know. You know, he wouldn't be patient and understanding that, you know, someone isn't of Craig Bellamy's ability, and he would let you know.
Is that not to be respected though? Especially you saying about Shearer, high standards. Could you not understand where it was coming from?
Yes, I could.
I'll meet your standards. Yeah, I tried to anyway.
Yes.
It was his delivery.
But if he, if a player speaks to you in a certain way, it's a no. And you've got to tell that player, haven't you? And I remember saying that to Craig, you know, you can't talk to me like that. You know.
So you had that one, one-on-one.
Well, it was in training. I remember saying, you can't talk to me like that. I know you're quick, but I'll catch it.
Might take him 3 or 4 days.
But I...
maybe longer.
I'll hunt him down.
Did you say it in that tone as well? Just
no, like, not that cool, you... no. I think I screamed at him. Saying that, yeah.
I've never seen you so...
Yeah, no, I think it was, yeah.
What a different year after.
Yeah, very, very much so. So, you know, you kind of stood up to him, but, you know, when you look at him... And when someone's got that desire to win a game, it makes them the player they are.
Yeah.
You know, and your biggest example is probably Roy Keane.
Yeah.
If you take away Roy Keane's desire and his commitment, he wouldn't be the Roy Keane that everyone knows.
All three of you must have experienced players that they've had a fallout with the manager, they've had, you know, different personalities, and that player switched off. Because he's like, fuck you, Jack. I'm not playing for him.
And you had a little bit of this at Stoke, and a lot of people saying, well, it's like the players aren't playing for the manager. And that, I find, appalling.
That's the worst thing.
Appalling.
Because the worst thing.
Whether you like the manager or not, I'm not necessarily playing for the manager. I'm playing for him, and I'm playing for him, and I'm playing for myself. And also, you've got 20, 30, 40, 50, 60,000 people coming in to watch you. So surely you owe it to them to work hard.
No? Very minimum, innit?
So when people say, they're not working for the manager, I don't get that.
Have you experienced it though?
The thing with football is it's totally different to any other job in the respect of the manager drops me.
Yeah.
And I've not played for five games, and I'm thinking I need to liven up. He puts me in and I score three goals in three games. I'm thinking, I tell you what, fuck you, Jack. Right, you should have played me the last five games.
Yeah, yeah.
But that also, you're doing it for yourself, you're doing it for your teammates, but evidently it's for your manager anyway.
Yeah.
So it don't matter what you think of him, the more successful you are, it's obviously looking better on him anyway. So you can't down tools to affect the manager because you're just only affecting yourself.
But that's you. I'm saying, has there been lads that you played with that have taken that approach? Like,
well,
it's all about them.
Mahrez now.
Yeah.
Mahrez is obviously.
You get it all the time now. Lads going on strike. That's fuck you, Jack. I want to leave the club.
It doesn't matter
how many people are turning out each week.
I did
and
that.
And the lads that they're playing with, I'm not playing.
I did that at Macclesfield when Brian Norton pulled me in the office. He said, Hull have made a bid for you. Championship.
Yeah.
Hour from my house, perfect. I says, oh, brilliant. He says, we're not selling you. I says, what do you mean you're not selling me? He says, they've got me for free. I can't remember what the fee were, but it was a good deal for the club. We're not selling you. He says, well, I want to go. He says, well, we're thinking of getting more money for you. He says, I'll tell you what then, I'm not playing Saturday. He says, what? He says, I am not playing for this football club on Saturday. He says, you can't say that. He says, I'm telling you. In fact, I don't think I'm able to play for the rest of the season. It's for January. I'm only 22 or something. I'm cocky little shit. So I don't think I'll be able
to. Somebody advising you to go
no,
on like that,
no,
or
no,
you just
no,
it was just you.
That was just me. Because that was I'm moving up to the Championship.
Yeah.
Two leagues, obviously, everything that comes with that. He says, come on, we'll go and see the chairman. So I says, come on, then we'll go and see the chairman. So I says, went in to see the chairman. I says, chairman, my back's gone. I don't think I'm able to play Saturday. If I don't think I'm going to play for the rest of the season. And the chairman shook his head. I said, so if I were you, I'd accept the bid. He says, I'll tell you what, I'll leave it with you. So I gets in my car. 20 minutes later, I got a call from my agent. They've accepted the bid. Get to Sheffield, do your medical. Which I failed. I thought, oh no. what have I done here? I'm at a bridge here.
Your bag's gone.
What did you fail on?
Yeah, for the rest of the season.
Your knee?
Yeah. I've not passed medical since I was 20.
I thought the reason why you had medicals is that you pass a medical and then the club goes, okay, yes, we'll take you. Now, if you don't pass, that means you might not play as much or we won't take you.
When I went to Hull, obviously I failed that one. Instead of signing 2.5 years, I signed 1.5 years and it ended up staying longer. From Hull, Stoke, I didn't have a medical with Stoke with Dave because obviously I've been on loan. Signing the summer, so I didn't really have a medical at Stoke. Preston, I signed at 11 o'clock at night. Nobody to give me my medical. Failed my medical at Cardiff. Dave Jones, I still want to sign him.
What did you fail it on at Cardiff?
My knee. I've got a dodgy knee.
Same
knee?
Yeah, I've got a dodgy knee. and then Fleetwood, can you touch your toes? Yeah, no bother, that one.
Can you touch your toes?
Forest Green, didn't really have one at Forest Green. Newport, touch your toes, yeah, job done.
Touch your toes.
You struggle with that.
Can
you touch your toes?
I can touch them now if you like.
No, you're all right. I know you're all right. It's not a medical.
But same as obviously my resi, in football, everyone's selfish. Every player is selfish in football. Of course, you've got to do it for you and your family. And so you need to do what you need to do to have the best career that you can have.
Yeah, for you, it's going from...
There's not a contradiction there in everything we've just said.
No, but it's I know fans in the media slaughter Mahrez, but going back to what Johnny said at Macclesfield, it'll be a life-changing sum of money for him.
Mm.
You know, and you've got to do everything that you can to make that happen, because the clubs, they won't be bothered. They'll just say, nah, you stay in here, this and that. Mm. You've got to make it happen, because it's life-changing.
That got me probably 10 years in the Championship. I might have never got another chance to get the Championship.
So, I mean, I can understand why the fans go ballistic and why the media jump on board and say they spoil this and that, but at the end of the day, you've got to look after yourself. It's your future. You've got kids at home.
The only reason that Mahrez has got an offer from Man City is because he's been incredible. So he's not done that for the manager, he's done that for himself. The manager's benefited from that.
And the club.
Yeah, and the club. I mean, what did they pay for him? £3 million, right?
If that.
Yeah.
So what happened exactly with Mahrez?
Have you been in that bungalow in Newcastle?
What happened?
It's just obviously Man City's bid for him,
yeah,
but Leicester's turned it down and he's down tools. I'm not coming in.
So he's just not gone in?
Not gone in.
And what did he turn down reportedly? How much?
60, wasn't it?
50.
See, that's a bit naughty, isn't it, from Leicester's.
Bearing in mind, by all reports as well, they've told him for the last three winners that you can leave. So would you do that if you were Mahrez?
No, I wouldn't down tools, no. I wouldn't.
But would you do everything you could to get out of there? On deadline day, you've heard Man City are in for you. Mm-hmm. Would you make it happen? What would you go to?
I certainly wouldn't down tools. I wouldn't do that. But I would make it very clear to the club how disappointed I would be, and try to make them see it from my point of view.
They're not asked,
but they wouldn't.
I get that. I understand it. I mean, okay. So when I left Stoke when I was 18, I had a choice of going to Newcastle or Leicester, and Leicester bid £250,000 more. So the club wanted me to go to Leicester or Newcastle at that time. There's no, you know, and I spoke to the board and explained it to him. You know, I said, well, I'll just.
Do you think you got a bit lucky with that then? But the board went, right, okay, fair enough.
Possibly. And the board were understanding. I mean, they got me for nothing. And back then, I think they were getting, I think it was Newcastle were prepared to pay 1.5 and Leicester 1.75. So it was a lot of money back then, you know. Yeah, so they were understanding. I was like, yeah, I've got to go to Newcastle. Mm-hmm. You know, it'd be like going to, moving from a mid championship table club to a top four club now. You've got to be understanding that. But they were very good. Peter Coates was, he was good. But going back to Mahrez, I can understand this frustration and this, that and the other. But I suppose I wouldn't be able to down tools. It's not in my DNA.
2003, Champions League. St James's Park, Juventus.
Goal or own goal?
Goal.
Did you score an own goal?
Did you score the own goal?
No. That's what they're saying, isn't it? Is it? Was it your goal or was it a
Buffon? It was
Griffin.
I'm giving
it. It had Griffin, didn't it? I don't score many goals. You can't take that one, surely.
Is that up there with the what?
I mean, the importance of the goal. It was a very important goal. We'd lost our first three games, and I don't think any team has then gone on to qualify. So Juventus come into town full of superstars, Nedved, Davids, Del Piero. I mean, it was a free kick. Laurent rolled the ball to me. Why he did that, I'm not sure, because he lovely left foot, usually just whips it in, rolls it to me, it takes a touch. And then I kind of took a bad touch, kind of like got away from me a little bit. And I thought, well, I'll just kind of slide and like kick it across the box. You know, and hopefully someone will kind of get on the end of it.
Is it a cross?
It was a goal. That's all you need to know. It was a goal. So Buffon, he almost kind of dived past it, where it hit his elbow and went in. And yeah, wow.
So was this the fourth game?
This was the fourth game, yeah. So we'd already been to Juventus and got beat 2-0. That was another story.
Did you play?
Yeah. Bobby Robson told me to do a man-marking job on Nedved. Wherever he goes, you go. Never ran so much in a game without touching the ball. So I just went everywhere he went. Everywhere. And you know what? It suited me fine. he could have went and stood on the corner flag. I'd have gone over on the corner flag with him. They were my orders. Yeah. No problem. So going back to the home game, he dived past it, was 1-0 and plenty of time, they hit the crossbar and then the whistle goes and you've won 1-0.
You must have
won
1-0.
Possibly, honestly, I cannot remember.
I think I'd have been out for 4 days.
Yeah. Those games don't come around very often for someone like myself. I suppose when you're looking at the best teams that you've ever played against. I mean, the Man United team, many Man United teams under Fergie were incredible. The Arsenal team, the Invincibles. But playing Barcelona was just, you just never touched the ball.
Who were you playing? It was left wing.
So that was a night I'll never forget. And when people say, oh, who's the best player that you ever played against? You know, I've played against the best players in Europe over the last 20 years. You know, Ronaldo, well, apart from Lionel Messi. But the player to give me a bit of a nightmare, really, was Marc Overmars at Barcelona. And the first half, I didn't know if I was coming or going or what. And Bobby just said, look, Griff, forget OB about covering him. OB, you're going to be all right. You'll be okay. And OB's looking at me and I'm looking at him. He's thinking, no, I'm not.
I'm far from okay.
I think he might have been against Clive. I think Clivert was playing up front. Yeah. So, you know, two centre-halves had their hands full, didn't they? So you're looking for that bit of protection from your full-backs. But a big threat to them was Marc Overmars. Just because the pitch is so big as well, and the ability to switch a ball from right to left in one pass or two quick passes, and you can't get out there. So basically, I just kind of went and stood next to him. You know, and if you tried to run in behind, I just kind of like, you know, clothesline him or something like that. So that was like, it was a learning curve for me to see the new camp, to play there, to walk down the tunnel. You've got this chapel on your right-hand side. Yeah, phenomenal times. And then Inter Milan, we went to Inter Milan, 12,000 Geordies. But they had Christian Vieri up front, big powerhouse of a forward. Kind of like a big...
John Parkin.
How'd you look at Parkin?
Kind of like a big, powerful centre-forward, traditional English centre-forward.
Yeah. Left pegger, wasn't he?
Left footer, yeah.
Dying breed. Dying breed.
Yeah, touch his toes, I'll tell you that one.
Dying breed. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We drew that game 2-2. Shearer got two goals and... just an amazing game. I remember coming off and just kind of looking around and just taking it all in. You know, you're at the San Siro here and this is incredible. You know, just take it in. It might never happen again. Well, it didn't. So that was 2-2, a great result for us, great game.
What was, I know you mentioned him before, Robert. Looking at him, I'd be pulling my hair out if I was a manager and a teammate.
Yeah, very.
Did you have a tear up with him?
We had a little altercation.
Oh, fill us in.
Yeah.
Fill us in.
Carry on, and I will.
Still playing. Oh, yeah. Oh, hello.
There's some battles you can't win, isn't there? So I mean, in terms of Laurent's ability, bit odd. He was very much, very, very much his own man. And I think the manager, Bobby, kind of just left him to his own devices. And Laurent, do you want to go to Paris? And he'd go to Paris, and we'd all be in on a Monday training. Where's Laurent? Oh, he's not coming back till Wednesday.
What? The players must have been happy about that, then.
Well, not particular. But he just kind of left it in the mind. I was like, oh, right. Well.
Was he performing on a Saturday?
Yeah, we touched on this.
A majority of the time. He would perform, and he was brilliant. Then in the odd game, he'd be glass hammer, just useless. But a very, very good player, very, very robust as well. You know, and yeah, I mean,
he was a bit of a tank, wasn't he?
But yeah, I mean, going on very much how I trained is how I played. You know, I said that before, didn't I? There was no difference, and I would tackle exactly the same. It's how I was. A bit of a lunatic at times, and he signed this player for like 12 million quid, and I'm like, I'll show you. 12 million quid, you're a left winger, let's go. And I went to smash him in training, he nutmegged me.
That's why he cost 12 million quid. Because he could do that.
We're on the back. And I'm like, I grew horns, I'm like, yeah. So it was just like clash after clash. And he was tough, Laurent. He was tough, you know, he was broad, he was quite thick set. I remember once, you know, just thundered into a tackle. And somehow, he's got up before me and just gone, like, give me a little elbow, side of my temple. So I've jumped up, ran, laid one on him.
Straight in.
And it's not knocked him over. So then you know you're in the shit. But thankfully, someone come in to save me.
Wasn't he a black belt in karate or something? It's not ridiculous.
I'm not sure. I didn't find out. Lucky enough, I didn't find out.
Did you catch him all right as well?
Yeah. Best one. And anyway, so the ball's over on the other side, and I'm like, looking at the ball, and I'm like, I can see you walking towards me. And it's Laurent. I'm like, okay, I'm thinking, like, I can't run. I kind of felt as if I wanted to run. Because he's just got this look. And I'm like, I'm in trouble here. So he kind of walked over to me, and I've gone, pop. So I was like, what do I do? So I kind of panicked, hit him. And he's like, not even flinched. It's like, uh-huh. And then I just remember then getting rugby tackled, and Gary Speed was on top of me, and he's like, you need to calm down. I'm like, I'm okay, I'm all right, Speed. You can get off me now. He's like, right, okay. He said, you know, there's cameras here and there and everywhere. I'm like, right, okay. So that was kind of.
Did you get in the press?
No. It was fine. But it was funny. Like when we got on the coach. You know, he's like, the Ron's there with a nice back on his eyes.
Wait, did you have one on your hand?
And I've got one on my hands. We were having a meal later on that night, and the manager said, look, Alan, Griff, Laurent and Sylvain Distin, because Laurent's English wasn't great, so Sylvain would like translate for him, you know, which is what's going on, and, you know, and I'm like, nothing. You know, and he was like, nothing, you know, it's fine. And we were like, shook hands. And that was it. We got on very well. After that, you know, we'd go around to Nobby's house on the run and come barbecues, and it was fine. You know, we.
Do you think you needed to do that? Was there that initial friction that you had to get that?
Well, I think, mate, you know,
it's all from the nutmegs.
Yeah, it was. From the nutmeg, actually.
It's all started with the nutmeg.
But he was a good lad, like I said. He was tough, very, very good player. And I think the Newcastle fans, you know, when you mention Laurent Robert, you know, they view him in a positive frame of mind, because he, like I said, on his day, he was very, very.
He scored
good.
Some belters, didn't he?
He scored some. You know, when his crosses, deliveries, and Shearer would thrive on crosses like that. But yeah, I mean, you're talking about. I got sent off in a reserve game, didn't I? I had a little tear up with a couple of players, and
I've actually seen the film, the video of it. And to be fair, if it got out, yeah, he's probably looking at 15 years. It's not really out in the public domain, is it? Because you would probably go to prison, Griff, wouldn't you? Let's be right about it. Who are you playing?
Aston Villa. Just going through a bit of a bad time in my career. I think I was. You could see that I was leaving Newcastle, not playing, kind of feeling sorry for yourself, and just. We've gone in for tackle, me and this other player. We've got up and there's a few verbals, and before you know it, you're involved in a little scuffle.
Well, a little scuffle. You
laid him out, didn't you?
By the sounds of it, it weren't a little scuffle.
Well, no, okay, it wasn't a little scuffle. It's just unusual to see a fight like that erupt in a, you know, two football
in
players
a
in a
yeah.
game.
Yeah,
in you know, 3 seconds, you know, as well.
It's usually. You know, it's usually handbags, isn't it?
Yeah. So with that, 50-50, you square up, talk us through what happens after that.
Like, he knows what exactly what
because he's just brushing over it. We need details, man. We need... Was it a right hook?
It wasn't a hook, it was just a... You know.
Just a...
And then someone else came in and they got a...
Yeah, so,
as well, yeah. Didn't they?
So, yeah, Mark...
Two on the floor. Out.
Yeah.
Whoa, no.
Say it was. Sounds better.
All right, three on the floor.
We're all letting the truth get away with a good story.
And they're four, 6'3".
Yeah, a bit like John, they were.
Brilliant.
So, yeah, so obviously got my marching order. And that was, it was funny because that was on a Tuesday reserve game. Off on a Wednesday, I'm in on a Thursday. So I went up to one of the senior players at Newcastle and said, oh, I think I need to apologise. He went, think. he said, yeah, just go to the manager, you know, just apologise. So I gone up to the manager Gaffer. I'd just like to apologise what happened Tuesday's game and getting sent off. He went,
Bobby Robson.
Yeah, he went, seen the video, son. He said, could have been a boxer, son. What happened? I'm like, and before I could kind of talk, he went, red mist. He said, yeah. He said, gonna have to fine you. I said, yeah. He said, 2 weeks. I'm like, I said, okay.
What, a week for each punch?
He said, coffee pop.
That was it.
And that was it, yeah. You know, but nothing to be proud of.
It happens.
It does happen, you know, and it does happen between teammates. And I think if you've got anything about you, you know, it's such a competitive world, and you spend so much time with each other. You know, you've got different characters. It happens a lot. You should just be manly about it. You know, dust yourself off, shake hands, and that's it.
Since I've known you, I can't imagine you losing your head or the story about Robert, reserve story. I can't imagine.
I mean, you're going back a long, long time ago when I was, you know, early 20s, and you know, when you're full of beans, aren't you? You know, you're 100. When you grow up, you kind of relax a little bit and you chill out. And I suppose, not that I necessarily lost that edge in terms of, you know, your tackling and your aggression and what have you, but a certain moment happened when I went to Mexico City with, it stemmed from the time at Portsmouth, where I got to know Linvoy Primus, and he was a Christian and a faith in football, and they all went out to Mexico City to like do a bit of charity work, and I went out there, and just what you saw out there just kind of changed my outlook on lots of things. So and it changed my outlook on football to the point where and I remember thinking, well, in them 90 minutes or however long the game lasts, you do your best. And if that gets you a win, great, or a draw. But if you lose, I can't turn back time. You know, and I suppose I got a little bit more relaxed, and it just kind of changed my outlook a little bit. So, yeah, and it's also growing up and maturing and, you know, having children, and so.
Is that a good or a bad thing in terms of performance?
No, because it never changed my performance. I always went out there,
right,
and I was still a winner, don't get me wrong. But I could, instead of like having a bad game and then beating myself up and taking that mood home, and you know, and spoiling the evening or spoiling the weekend with your wife, your children.
So essentially, it might be a more positive thing because you've got a clearer head.
Yeah, you've got a clearer head. You can kind of control your emotions a little bit better.
That comes with experience as well.
It does, yeah. Just life experience as well, isn't it? You know, you're mature. And
what did you do at Mexico City, and where did that come from? Who initiated that?
So it was through the charity Faith in Football, which was run by Linvoy Primus and Darren Moore. I mean, you meet Linvoy, and he's the happiest guy you can ever meet, and you think, I want a bit of that cake.
More or same.
Yeah, so the Christians.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so Christians. You know, great guys. You know, lovely, lovely people. So you thought, and growing up, I kind of, it was like a bit of a Catholic background. And, you know, if someone said to me, oh, do you believe in God? I'd be like, yeah, I believe in God. But that's kind of where it started and finished, really. So you kind of thought, I'll maybe go down this, take this walk of Christianity. And then Linvoy said, oh, would you want to come on this trip? We're going out to Mexico City. I was like, no, at first. No, I was like,
I'd rather go to Cancun, but you can drop us off. that way.
Yeah. I was like, no, because that's your off-season time. You know, and you're a bit selfish. You want to do whatever it is you want to do. You know, you want to go back home to Wigan, or you know, back to Liverpool, see your family, or you know, go on a few holidays with your family yourself. And he's like, no, come. You know, it'll be this, that, and the other. So I was like, right, okay. So are you going, Linvoy? He's like, yeah, I'm going. Moro's the same. Moro's going. Luar's going. I'm going. It was only me who went, and 10 other people. Somehow Linvoy got out of it. Somehow Linvoy got out of it. Moro.
They're all in Magalhães. Take Brennan to Walter.
Moro's got an operation. Moro's got an operation on his knee. Luar, couldn't get in touch with Luar. No idea where Luar was. So I'm on this plane out to Mexico City.
with 10 people? I don't really know. And I'm like, okay. It's all for charity.
You know? I'll go with it. I said I'm going now. I'm here.
So,
you could have got off the plane, would you have?
Yeah.
The doors weren't shut.
Did you not ring them at the airport going,
where are you, lads?
Good crack, lads.
I'm sure I did.
Come on, lads. Yeah.
Did
on,
it get to that stage that you got to the airport?
You know, you paid your money and all that, and it was like you were too far. And I was like, right, well, I'm going. You know, let's give it a whirl. So it was basically you were handing out kit and clothes to the homeless. You know, the people over there with the charity, they organised this football match, and it was like all these gangs had turned up who were, one minute they're fighting each other, but football kind of brought them together, and we had this kind of little tournament that the charity over in Mexico City organised. You know, and then you're talking, you know, I'm talking about myself because at the time I was a Premier League footballer, and you know, and the football mad, and you're kind of giving them a little bit of an insight, you've got a translator. And then we got told, oh, we're going over to a place called, I think it was La Loma. It was like a labyrinth, this place was just like a labyrinth, and it was just chaos. And what happened is we kind of put on this football session, and next minute this car comes kind of screeching down like onto this it was like a stony pitch we had, so it's kind of like handbrake Ramsatch. Turned it almost, yeah. And he's like, you've got to get out of there anyway. So we had to just go the back roads. Later found out the reason why we had to go, because we were going to get kidnapped, so we had to scoot out of there.
So the fuck it, the sun sent you back.
So I'm thinking,
they might have had you for half a day, fuck it, we'll get take him back.
So it obviously filtered through, you know, that you had this foreign group of people, and you know, in La Loma, which is obviously a quite a dangerous part of Mexico City, and we had to get out of there. And you were there for, I think it was another couple of days, and I've never been so vigilant in my life. And you know, you're phoning home and you're like talking to the missus, and she's like, oh, so what's happened? And I'm like, yeah, I nearly got kidnapped. She's like, oh, right, okay. Listen, Keenan's shouting me, I've got to go and do the tea, take care, bye. I'm like, did you just hear what I said there? It's like, you know, it didn't kind of sink in. But the whole experience, you know, seeing young children, you know, no homes, you know, looked at as like vermin, just changed everything. And when you've obviously got children yourself, well, you come home and I'm thinking, I'm going to sell everything, I'm going to do this, that and the other, but unfortunately, yes, but you just settle back into your way of life. But
it's your mindset.
Oh, big time. Yeah, very much so. And it certainly made me realise how fortunate and how blessed I am. But yeah, so that kind of changed. You know, it didn't take away my desire to win as such, but I just, in terms of life in general, viewed it a lot better, and also could handle disappointments a lot better as well. So, but yeah, I mean, it was an interesting time. So I went from...
You've drawn me in. Yeah. Take me down.
Why? He's booking a ticket.
I've been having Bibles back. I'm excited about
it. Oh, we'll all go selling. We'll all go.
I'm not sure you get in, John. Anyway, so I got the opportunity. Tony rang me and said, oh, would you want to come up to Stoke? You know, and play, and it kind of felt as if I was going back home, because I'd also bought a house
bungalow.
Back in, not a bungalow, I'd moved
two floors.
No, two floors.
I'd
moved up the property ladder. So I bought a house back in Stoke, and I was there for a full season. Loved my time there. Just missed out on the playoffs, and then that's when I had that dilemma in the summer: do I go to Derby or do I go to Stoke?
Yeah.
And I chose Derby, and obviously it was a very, very tough time, getting beat almost every single week, quite heavily.
Was that the lowest points?
Yeah, yeah.
Of any club?
Yeah, I think it ended
up bringing that up.
12, yeah.
Pardon?
12?
Like 13, I think.
13?
Better than 12.
Get that money.
So, yeah, so, but then
Billy Davis got the sack, Paul Jewell come in.
It was to last that long.
And then that's when I got a phone call off Tony again, saying, "Oh, would you want to come permanently? You know, we'd like to bring you in." And then, and Stoke at the time, flying high, weren't they? Flying high, doing
you
well.
You coming straight in as captain as well?
So he brought me in. I mean, he knew me inside out, and he knew the kind of person I was. And that, you know, and in doing that, fulfilled an ambition of mine, because as soon as I left Stoke, I was thinking in the back of my mind, I'd love to come back to Stoke and be captain of that club one day. I'd love that. I never ever said that to anyone, you know. Yeah. I didn't say it to Tony, but then he brought me in and made me captain straight away.
Have you waltzed into that dressing room then as kind of top dog kind of?
No,
thing? You've got
no.
captaincy straight away, four and a half year deal.
No,
you've wandered straight in. No noses out of joint yet.
No, well, because
what's your
temper? I think more than anything, it's a respect thing. I think. Yeah. Because when you go into a dressing room, like, you get some players where a huge chunk of the career, or it might have had 5, 10, whatever years it is in the Premier League, and then they come down and somehow they think they're too good for that level. Well, you're not. That's why you're there.
Yeah. If you're good enough, you'd still be in the
exactly,
the Premier League.
Exactly. So, and I knew that. And I knew the guys who they'd like be playing with, and there was a mutual respect there. They know what I'm about. And I was simply about working hard, and like I said, working hard for myself and my teammates. Yeah.
So then, obviously, you went on loan to end the season to Reading.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I had a little fallout with Tony. Petulant fallout, really. But I think in Tony's mind, he was probably ready to make that decision to bring Andy Wilkinson in. He ended up going into the team ahead of me, and doing very well for himself. So I think along with like a little bit of a fallout with Tony, and the fact that you had Wilco there as well, resulted in me not playing. And yeah, I mean, I think almost a year passed, and I thought, you know what, I need to kind of get myself out there now, back into the world playing, and you know, sell yourself either to the club that you've gone on loan to or someone else.
I suppose it's a testament to character, so to speak, because like I said, you had that 4.5 year contract.
And yeah, and I mean, I was only 4 miles away from the training ground in my house.
Yeah.
Kids were over the road at the school, so life was comfortable, it was great, but you want to play. But no, that, you know, my days were numbered, and that was fine. And yeah, I went to Reading, you know, and I remember saying to the players, you know, our ambition has to be promotion. You know, it has to be, look at, you know, individually, some great players here. You know, if the manager can bring in a couple, you know, that has to be our ambition. And yeah, we went from strength to strength, did really well. And that's when we got through to the playoff final. So yeah, so then you obviously got Swansea at Wembley, and you're 3-0 down at half time. It's like, what now?
What kind of team talk goes on there?
What next? Well, I'll tell you. I mean, the manager, you've got to somehow install belief, because everyone's like, you know, and we had a young team, apart maybe from me, Zurab, the centre half, and Ian Hart. It was a young team, and Joby McEnough.
Did you deserve to be 3 down?
Yeah, we did deserve to be. So you're trying to install some form of belief, aren't you? You know, it's not over. It's not over. You've got 45 minutes. So it kind of went a little bit like that. And you know, if we get the next goal, get that good goal early doors, and everything, the whole dynamics of the match will change then. And it did. I think Noel Hunt might have got a goal off a corner. Matt Mills got a header off a corner. It's 3-2. Ball comes out to Jem Carrington, edge of the box, shoots, hits the post. Goalkeeper's dived, hits the post, comes out to Hunty. All he's got to do is tap it in. But then Monk's coming across, almost sliding. So Hunty then tries to kind of like clip it over and
lift it.
And it hits Monk's toe and goes out for a corner. So you're talking like such fine margins. They're going 3-3, they're on the ropes. 4-3, that's what I believe would have happened. And then I give away a penalty. No idea why.
You've just been digging some of that, but
he gave it away.
We were 3 on that. Yeah, he gave a penalty away. He was shit.
Yeah, because there was 2 penalties in the game. That's why. So that was his
luckily
penalty.
Luckily, I went to Mexico, so I don't dwell on it.
Yeah, I don't think straight away I thought, let's not worry about it. I nearly got kidnapped.
They got kidnapped. What is it? It's only a penalty, isn't it? Fucking biggest game, like the biggest game in the world, really.
I know, John. I know. Yeah. So you give away the penalty, and Scott Sinclair's cool as you like, slots it home, and just takes the wind out of your sails, doesn't it? You know. And yeah, so we lose, and that feeling, not nice feeling. You know, what was it my fault that we lost the game? No, not solely my fault, but. You know, I felt huge responsibility that we lost that game, and that wasn't particularly easy to shake off. I know we spoke earlier on.
You're a bit light of it, but
it took until at least 8 o'clock that night.
But you're looking around, and there's a lot of young lads who hadn't played in the Premier League. You know, you know how special and magical it is,
and how financially rewarding.
And how financially rewarding as well. You know, so you felt hugely responsible, but. You've got to go again, haven't you? You dust yourself down and you go again, and they went and won the league the following year. So that tells you everything you need to know about every single one of those players to be able to bounce back from such heartache the year before, such disappointment to then bounce. And we lost Shane Long and Matt Mills. Shane Long, what a player for Redden. I mean, Shane Long epitomises work ethic. He never
he couldn't square in a brothel now though, could he? Bless him.
All right, John, what are you? 25 goals here.
Hey, you can say that, can't you? Hey, good God.
Scored one in but 3 years.
You know, he's...
No, I know what you're saying. I mean,
he is under...
Never give up. Never give up. And I've seen him beat centre-halves up twice his size, win aerial battles with centre-halves who are a foot bigger than him. You know, he's a real handful. And we lost him, and we lost Matt Mills, two of your biggest players. You know, but yeah, they went on to
win the league. I know you said went on to win the championship. Do you not consider yourself
you're right. I think I played 12 or 13 matches. So while, yes, I contributed, but did you really feel part of that winning team that goes and plays 46 games?
See, I felt a bit like that at the start. I might have started five games, came on 33 times or so. So there's still that little bit in the back of your mind where you're like...
Yeah, so I just didn't feel as much part of it as what I would have wanted to. So that's probably why I say they. But I didn't feel sorry for myself and go, oh, you know, the manager's like, you know, we've celebrated, you know, we're going to go away for a little trip. Do you want to come? I was like, yeah. It's a free thing.
As long as we don't have to drink, though, do we, Gaffer? So I'm not a big drinker.
My taste buds had changed a little bit by then. So I left Reading, and was struggling for a club. You know, when I left Reading, I thought to myself, I still think I can play in the Championship. So I was holding out for a Championship club, and nothing materialised. Contract off Coventry came through, and I was like, no, I'm holding out for a Championship. And nothing was happening. I was like, blimey. You know, Saturdays are coming, you're cutting grass. And you're like, and that was a bit of a, that was a reality check. And then, you know, the offer from Donny come, and I'm like, right, take it, yeah. So walk through the door.
Is that the year you got promoted?
Yeah. There was rumours, like, amongst the lads that he'd be signing. And obviously when I was growing up, when he's telling the Champions League story, I was 15, 16, you know, so before he'd signed, there was like an element of respect. I thought I was a little bit nervous meeting him.
Yeah.
Just keep me distant.
He's trying to trying to justify how rude he was.
Yeah. Are you going to let him tell me story? Or?
Oh, why are you getting aggressive?
So I thought I'd just be respectfully quiet, keep me distant, get annoying in my own time. That's what I'm good at. Just
6 months it took.
So then he's a bastard, that's what he is.
Yeah, there was a full changing room. And then he walks in with his rucksack, tracksuit bottoms, starts going round everybody. Morning.
Don't talk like that, Chris.
It's a little bit like...
It's a lot. Torn, isn't it? It's a lot.
Shaking everybody. I thought, fucking hell, he's a bit serious, isn't he? It knocked us back a little bit more.
Do you want me to go like, fist pumping or high-fiving?
What's
just a bit of charisma or something like... So it's
early morning.
If I would have walked in with a big Louis Vuitton bag, that would have been all right.
Oh, yeah.
Hey?
It's about the aftershave.
I had proper stuff that then.
So it took us a while.
Full story.
He's not green now.
So it took us a while to get to know him, basically. But you could see from his first day in training that, for a start, you didn't know why he was at Doncaster. You know, everything, 100%. Yeah, so we reported first day of pre-season. And I'd enjoyed myself that summer. So, like...
All right, yes.
It's an unwritten rule, first day of pre-season, you kind of suss out your running partners. You know, there's always the fit fuckers who've been running every day. And then you get the other ones who aren't very good. So somehow... It was just me and him. Beforehand, I was going around being like, are you any good? And they were going, yeah, I'm all right. are you any good?
Yeah, we're suss it out. You good at running? I'm all right. And they were like, fucking hell.
So I asked the whole team, and everyone was like, yeah, I'm not bad. Said the same to him. What you like? Shite.
You'll do for me. Wait,
I was more short, sharp, you know, like 5 metres and 10 metres sprint, little sprints. Go on.
I think what happened next?
Well, I'll tell you what happened next. You know, don't you? I think it was me asking the questions. I was like, Brownie, I don't think you're a good runner. You know, like the size of him, got a bit of a limp. I'll partner you, yeah? Right, you know. So usually your running partner kind of sticks with you because he doesn't want you. What you don't want is someone to highlight how bad you are to the manager.
Well, I've had that for 18 pre-seasons.
I think, to be fair, when we're talking about pre-season, right, the people I'm usually in front of are the goalkeepers. And him. I was thankful for them. Thankful.
Stoke, I dropped out of the bleep test before the goalkeepers.
You dropped out before it...
Before level 10?
No, before it starts. No, before the jog started. We started on a walk.
I had a good summer and all that one.
So I'm like, Brown, you know, not going to let me down. Obviously, you know, if I can get away from you, I won't let you down. Let me down. Let me down. Deserted me. Left me. Man down, just left me.
Not straight away, I'll give you. But it was that bad. I had to, you know, like he was struggling that much.
I'm sorry. I had to leave the
week. Got to leave the week.
Not nice. Yeah, it's not a nice.
Did you say anything?
No. Do you know what? It was like it was slowly going like that, and I'm like, Brownie, shoe on the other foot. One the left, I'm just saying, putting it out there. Told him many times.
You've got to do it for yourself, Chris. Yeah,
that's it. New manager comes in. But on a serious note...
Well, why didn't we kind of have that talk beforehand? Why didn't we have that talk beforehand?
But on a serious note, when Dick Huff come in, he was the only right back at the club. And for some reason, he just didn't... Like, none of the lads could believe it. You know, players aren't stupid. They know who should be involved, who shouldn't be involved, who you want around the club.
It's a funny one.
Did he not tell you why he didn't want you?
No, he didn't really. No real reason. And you're thinking to yourself, well, is he better than me? Is he better than me? And then obviously, you know, you're not playing as much and then you're picking up little injuries. They won the league and it was...
They again?
Well, I mean, I played more games this time. I think I played about 18 or 19. So, he's, you know, that's a good number of games. Yeah. But I got a bad injury. I think I tore my hamstring. It was quite a bad tear, and I didn't play the last three games or something like that. And the manner in which he got promoted, that last game with Brentford missing the penalty, then there's a breakaway. Coppinger puts it in last minute, and you not only get promoted, but get promoted as champions.
Yeah.
And my celebration was, I mean, that's brilliant, but I was like a little bit subdued, and I'm thinking, well, why is that? Is it because you weren't playing then, or... And the lads just all went on the coach and, you know, and joined themselves. And I just went down to see a good friend of mine, Noel Hunt. And I just thought, the game's not, doesn't mean the same to me as what it once did.
Was that the...
Fell to me then. I thought, maybe it's not that far away. And then obviously the following season where you're not playing as much and you're doing all the travelling and, you know, it's just not the same, really. And then, you know, you leave Doncaster and...
When did you leave?
I think I left in the November time, so we sorted out, you know, left by mutual consent, and just chilled out and just enjoyed my time with my family, with my children, and and every day, you know, even when like Saturdays had come around, it wasn't like it wasn't match day anymore.
You did play for Chester.
Yeah, so then
We had, well, I had a good number of months off. I kept myself ticking over with my own training, and then got a phone call from Chester, said, "Oh, you know, would you mind coming in and, you know, trying to help us out a bit? You know, need a bit of experience." 5 games left to play, and I was like, "Yeah, okay." It's, you know, but then in the 4th game, tore my hamstring. And even then, when you're kind of trying to do the right things off the pitch and you're still getting injured, you're like,
"Oh,
you know," and I was done then.
Was that a difficult decision to make? Or
no,
did you just,
no. Well, it was kind of made for me. It was made for me. So, you know, you slowly saw it happening. So it kind of almost prepares you mentally for that. As if, like, a friend of mine, Clive Clark, who, you know, he had to stop due to a serious heart problem. So if you're doing well and then bang, it stops, God only knows how I would have dealt with that mentally, I don't know. But mine was,
gradual.
I could see it coming, and then it kind of, the decision was made for me. No one else really wants you. You haven't got that same drive, you haven't got that same buzz. Mm. So, you know, and you look back and you go, you focus on all the positives and not so much the negatives. I mean, live the dream tonight, Jesus. It's at any level playing football is a wonderful achievement. But for me to play with those players I did, and to have the managers and playing certain games, and, you know, to gain promotion with Doncaster, Reading, Stoke, to cap, you know, you look back and you're like, I mean, I never ever thought that would certainly be the case. So very grateful. And you're welcome.
Cheers, Griff.
Thanks, mate.
That's a balance.
Absolute pleasure, old boy.
Thanks for listening. Leave us a review on iTunes. That'll get us up the charts there. And I think we're going to do all the best or funniest reviews we'll have out on the next episode. Any goodbyes? Just cheerio.
See you later.
I'll see you later.
Cheers.
What did you do with the bungalow in Newcastle?
Well, that was long gone, John. that was long
still
gone.
Got, have you still got the bungalow in Newcastle?
I really want to say yeah.
You want to make it into the audio let?
I really want to. I want to say yeah, but no. The bungalow got sold long, long time ago. Long time ago.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.